This is Back to Back.
Yo, what's up, Back to Backers? This is Willie Joy. Welcome to the show. This is Back to Back. This is my podcast. We're back another Tuesday. How are you? How you feeling? How you doing? I ran out of stuff there. Ran out of gas at the end. But you get the idea. Hello, nice to be with you. I hope everybody had a good Thanksgiving here in the States. To all my international listeners, don't worry about it. Not really that important of a holiday. I had a good one over here. Ate too much food, as is the custom. That was last night. Today, I'm struggling a little bit. The body is weak. But mentally, I'm feeling strong. I'm feeling good. I hope you can say the same. I've got Jana on the show today. Jana's here. We actually recorded this one the day before Thanksgiving, because we're turning this one around quick. And it was great to talk to her. She just dropped her debut album called Hope and Chaos. It's out right now. And in the conversation you're about to hear, we talk a lot about that album, the process of it, creating it, writing it, conceptualizing it. There's a lot to go into, and we talk about a lot of other stuff as well. So in the description, in the show notes for this episode, you're going to find a link where you can go follow Jana, go grab the new album, keep up to date with everything she's doing. She's got an album tour starting early 2022. Don't miss that if she's hitting your city. And you will also find a link to come join the Back-to-Back Discord, where you can come talk to me anytime you want. I'm always hanging around there. We can talk about this podcast. We can talk about your favorite episodes, who you'd like to see coming up. We can talk about your own music, your own art. If you create stuff, of course, there's always space for that too. You can send it to me. We're listening to your music every single week live on my Twitch. And the links for all of that are going to be in the description of this episode. So like I said, when I talked to Jana for this episode, it was the day before Thanksgiving. And I think both of us were just a little run down. It's been a long month. It's been a long year, for that matter. For Jana, of course, she was in the middle of her promo campaign after dropping the new album, Hope and Chaos. And we start off the convo talking about, you know, everything that goes into not just making an album, but once you make it, you got to put it out. You got to promote it. You got to do a million other tiny things that aren't just creating music. And that can be a lot to deal with just in and of itself. But she's got a very interesting story, trained as a classical pianist from a young age, multi-instrumentalist, singer, producer, DJ, and really doing it all on her own for a large part of her career. I kept coming back to that in the conversation because not only is it very impressive, but that DIY aesthetic, I think, is a huge part of what makes her such a unique artist, that she hasn't had, you know, some giant backing behind her the whole time, some giant cosign, label, whatever it was. Having to build something on your own is going to change, you know, what that something is, how that something is presented. And for her, I think it's ended up in this really authentic, interesting place. You know, early on in her career, she built a significant, very large Twitch following that I think served her really well in those early years. It was funny doing this interview live on my Twitch, you know, where I'm still very much new to the game and she's very much the OG there. It's just funny. It makes me think about it. There's no one right path to get there. There's no one right way to do it. Everybody finds their own way. And that's part of why I love doing this show. You know, hearing about everybody's path. What turn did you take? You know, which way did you go when you got to that part? I think Jana's story, super inspirational, super smart, super creative, all of it. I think you're going to really dig it. If you do, of course, I'd love to hear from you. Like I said, you can always hop in the Discord, hop on my Twitch, let me know. Or you can also hit me up on social media, at Willie Joy, at Back to Back Pod on everything. And if you would like to support this show, you know, just let a friend know, man. Spread the word. We appreciate it. It means a lot. It really does help. You know, put somebody who loves music as much as you do onto this show. Maybe recommend some of your favorite episodes on social media. Maybe let some of your favorite artists know they should be coming on the show. Whatever it is, I love you for it. I appreciate the support, and I will always try to show that love back. So with that being said, I hope you're doing well out there. I hope the year is wrapping up nicely for you. I hope whatever you're working on is going well, whatever you're hoping on comes through. And mostly, I am just appreciative, as always, that we get to share this time together and these conversations. Let's get into this one right now. This is me and Jana, back to back. Let's go. We were just talking while we were getting set up about, you know, obviously your album is out. That's why we're here. But I'm also curious. I always love talking about the process of getting it out there, right? Like, mm-hmm. we'll talk about the album. We'll talk about the whole thing. But just right now, you were saying, you know, the campaign of putting it out, interviews, videos, all that can be really tiring. Is this the biggest like promotional push you've ever done for something you've put out?
Yeah, it is. You know, it's my first album, so it's special. And I've never done an album rollout before. And like, right. I've never even done a there's so many things in an album rollout. Like, you know, I put out like small EPs before, but for that, it was just like, here's an artwork, here's four songs, you know?
Yeah.
But with an album, like, I learned that there's so much, you know, there's conceptualizing the album, first of all, and even just like, you know, there's an art to placing the songs in certain parts of the album. That itself, like track listing is like an art itself. And there's the album art branding and how it ties in with videos and the visuals. And then there's a tour branding, which is also tying in the album. There's merch, you know, and there's other sorts of products you want to put on your store. And I didn't know it was going to be this much putting out an album, but you know, I'm glad I learned and I got through it. And I feel more prepared if I do an album again.
Well, yeah. And you do a lot of this yourself too, right? Like, am I right that you're involved with a lot of the design? I know you direct a lot of the music videos. And I mean, creatively, you have your hands on a lot of this, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm still a pretty small artist. You know, I don't have like a huge major label giving me fancy money to do all this stuff.
That would be nice. Yeah.
You know, like my music video, you know, it was a crew of three people. You know, it was me, my boyfriend, and we hired one more guy to help with assistant camera. And you know, I was explaining this to some of my actress friends and she was like, oh, wow. Like, who did your hair and makeup in this video? I'm like, I did it. And they're like, what? Like, how did it stay on? I'm like, I don't, you know, it's a lot of setting spray. And it's like, yeah, like I, you know, it's a 3-person crew and, you know, it's also, for my music video Where You Are and the album trailer, like, my boyfriend directed, shot, and edited and colored everything. And so, you know, like, you know, I think working on a smaller budget calls for also wearing different hats. And like, yeah. You know, even with merch and my vinyl design, like it was me and like my friend sitting in like his room at his mom's house. And I'm like, oh, I think the butterfly here is a little too bright. It has to move this direction. So it's been very hands-on for me. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, do you like that, I guess, is the next question. Cause I think there's some artists who are like, I don't want to deal with anything but the music, or I don't want to deal with anything, but I just want to go on tour and, you know, I want to hire someone to take care of the stuff I don't care about. For you, is that part of the fun, like being involved in all of it? Or is it kind of just an all hands on deck situation?
No, I love it. There's been times in my career, like maybe even prior to the pandemic, when I've let someone take more of the steering wheel of like the creative direction. And it never really turns out the way that I feel like satisfied with. And maybe I think that's just naturally because I think I'm a pretty creative person. Like I love decorating. Like I am obsessed with home decor. I, You know, I love makeup. I love fashion. So I think that naturally plays into me, like, loving to have control over most of the even visual aspects of my branding.
How far back does that go? Like, if we're going back to, because I know you started playing music at a young age, were you always a creative kid just in general?
Yeah. You know, I wouldn't say I'm so creative to the point where it's like, I'm that one kid who's walking around with tinfoil and like beads sticking out and like crazy nails. Like, I'm not like artistic in that like really interesting, obscure history.
Yeah, like out but, there. Yeah, I feel
yeah,
you.
Yeah. I think I am creative. Like, of course I am. I'm a freaking musician. I'm creative.
I think you could say that. Yeah.
Yeah. I played piano since I was six. I mean, just because my mom made me do it. But I never hated it. And
Well, that's good. I feel like sometimes you end up hating what your parents force you to do at a young age.
Yeah, that's how I know I actually liked it, because I didn't hate it.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Were you good at it pretty quickly? Like, did you take to it? Like, practicing wasn't, you know, something you hated to do, all that kind of stuff?
I think I do have like a natural, like intuitive feeling with music. You know, like starting from like what I could remember with playing piano, like I've always had like perfect pitch, and like, you know, people would be like really fascinated with the fact that I could just like play a melody just by hearing it. And it's like something I've always been able to do since I was young. And I was like, what? How could you not do it? You know? So right. I think I have a natural gift in that. But, you know, I also don't want to feed into the stereotype of people who have perfect pitch and like always talking about having a perfect
pitch. Right, right, yeah.
But I kind of am like that, to be honest. But yeah, no, it's, I truly love music. And I think because, you know, I do have a natural, like, intuitive feeling with it. Like, it's something that I've always wanted to do with my life.
Do you think your mom got you into piano early on? Was she expecting it to be as serious of a thing for you as it became? Or was it kind of, you know, like, why do you think she encouraged you to get into piano at a young age?
You know, I mean, she just pictured her daughter to be like a very like demure, sophisticated, classical piano girl. That's all she wanted. Like, she just wanted like a daughter that was like a princess, you know. And then I became a tattooed DJ. Right. Yeah. Yeah, no, but she's proud of me. I mean, which is pretty uncommon in Asian culture, you know, like in Asian cultures, more so often, like, you know, families will like try to pressure their children into doing a certain career path. But my mom has always been super like supportive of me just doing whatever I wanted to do, as long as, you know, like it was something that I worked hard on and something that made me happy and something that was legal.
So yeah, legal's good.
Yeah. So she's honestly very supportive of what I want to do.
Well, that's good. I mean, and correct me if I'm wrong, but she moved with you to the States when you were, what, 5 or 6 years old?
I was actually born here.
Oh, you were born here. Okay.
I was born here. Yeah. So my mom moved to the States, I think, when she was around like 30.
Okay.
And she met my dad here.
Got
and
it.
She couldn't speak English, but my dad was born here. So yeah, they had me here.
Oh, interesting. And yeah, the only reason I brought it up is to say, I think I've talked to a lot of people who are the sons or daughters of first generation immigrants, and it's an interesting dynamic when those sons or daughters go on to be artists, because I think, you know, for first generation immigrants, you come to this country and it's so much work just to get here. And there's so much that I think anyone in that situation goes through just to try to build a new life and start in a new country, that then sometimes the expectations on their kids can be really high, or other times they can be like, no, like I worked really hard so that you can go and do whatever it is you want to do, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Well, my mom was actually like a singer.
Oh, wow.
She would like travel between like different pubs and bars, and she had like a agent too. Like, that's what she told me. She won't like talk about it too much with me. I think she's like embarrassed or something.
Oh, that's interesting.
But, you know, yeah, she was also musical. And my family, my mom's family side is also, is very musical too. Like, my uncle is a professional musician. So yeah, I think she's just always been super encouraging. If I wanted to do music, she's never been the kind of mom that's like, oh, well, I moved to this country and you better be rich or anything.
Right. That's good. That's
yeah.
good.
Yeah. So I'm very lucky to have that.
What kind of music was around you growing up? Like, what kind of music, you know, would your mom sing at home? Was there like any style or artist that got a lot of play in your house?
Yeah. Mainly, I mean, you know, I'm talking about the ages of like up to like 6 years old. Like, mainly it was like Chinese music, particularly an artist called Jay Chou. He's like biggest in Asia. He's like Kanye okay. and Drake combined there. Like, and you know, I listened to him a lot. My uncle was a backup singer for him.
Oh wow!
At all of his concerts. So every time Jay Chou came to the States to perform, like, we'd go to all these concerts. And my mom would also play a lot of classical music, you know, because I was playing classical piano. She would also play a lot of like film score from like old romantic 90s, 80s movies. I'm actually not sure which era, but
sure.
The movie soundtrack she would play a lot was a movie called Somewhere in Time. And she would like to play all these like really romantic music, like Titanic, you know,
right,
like
yeah.
My Heart Will Go On, Celine Dion type
yeah,
of music.
Yeah.
Very musical, very emotive, very emotional.
That's interesting, because I think, you know, maybe I'm reaching too much for this metaphor, but I think I can almost hear some of those influences in your music. You know, I think there is like a cinematic quality to a lot of the music that you make, you know, even today, even with the new album. And when I knew we were coming to talk, I was doing a little research. And am I right also that you went to school and studied film scoring at a certain point?
Yes. Yeah. That makes me happy that you can hear like cinematic influences, because I think that's, to me, that's, I think that's what I've always felt my music was. And like, that is definitely how I write music too. Like, I'm very visual when I write music. Like, I typically will already envision what the music video would look like when I'm in the process of writing a song. But yeah, I went to a classical music school. It was called San Francisco Conservatory of Music. And I studied film scoring there. And I initially wanted to become a film composer, but I went to raves and I was like, this is cool. I'm going to be a DJ.
Yeah, that's how we get you, man. Yeah.
Yeah.
Was that your first exposure to electronic music in a serious way while you were at college?
Yeah, I mean, when I heard it in high school and even the beginning of college, you know, I was like I was like reluctant about it, you know, like, I was like, this isn't real music. Like, I was right. such an elitist. I was a hipster in that way, because I was going to classical music school and like, I wanted to justify that what I was studying was the best. Right.
Right, of course.
Yeah. So, but then, you know, when I actually started to learn how to produce electronic music, I was like, this is so hard, like, you know, because yeah. the hard parts in producing pop music and electronic music isn't about melodic complexity. It's about mixing. It's about like, how do you make a snare sound like it's here or here, you know?
Yeah.
And that's a completely different world than writing complex melodies as it is in classical music.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, classical music, it's so interesting to think about the idea of coming from, you know, a sort of classical composing background into electronic music, because they're both equally complex, but like you said, such a different frame of reference. Whereas, mm-hmm. you know, for a score, I mean, you're writing a piece to be played by, 100 people, right?
Right.
And just the mindset of like paring that down to just one person, but still having all of these layers in a single song. The way you write songs now, do you incorporate any of that background? Do you think that's part of what makes you sound like you at this point? Like, are there those, you know, classical composition influences the way you write music now?
I definitely think so. I don't approach music in those sense where this is how I'm going to sound to not sound like anyone else. Like, I approach it in a way of like, just how I feel natural. I think luckily that even though I never wrote music in the way where it's like, I want to be known as cinematic EDM. Yeah. I just wrote it because I thought it was pretty. But I'm very happy that even though I didn't intentionally do that, people have still repeatedly told me that my music sounds cinematic, which is like the biggest compliment to me ever. And I think it does really influence it because I can't really pinpoint down to what one thing I'm doing is to make it sound cinematic, but you know, I tend to, you know, like to write maybe five different melodies and have them going on the same time, right? Having different layers. Like, you know, for example, in the drop of Where You Are, I have a jazz guitar going like E F E F E F. I have a vocal chop doing long legato notes. I have a different layer of an electric guitar doing a different pattern. And I probably have around like eight melodies actually going on. And I think that's how like classical music is composed. Like, yeah. You know, it's about a quartet or an orchestra, and all of them are most likely doing very slightly different things, but together they sonically create like a tonal character. And whereas sometimes in pop music and electronic music, it's one thing, it's mixed very cleanly,
yeah.
And it's like the focus. So I would say I approach writing music still in the classical way of thinking, where in a sense, it's still like an orchestra and there's sometimes too many ideas going on.
Mm.
And sometimes you can't hear everything specifically, but it all kind of blends together, which can cause muddiness, but that's a vibe.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. That absolutely is a vibe. I mean, that's one reason why I love making electronic music so much is, I mean, A, you can do it all yourself. You can be the whole orchestra, but then there's no one right way to do it, right? Like, you can, if you want to, you can stack, you know, five different synths on top of each other. You can make this wall of sound. And, you know, as long as it's your vision, I don't think there's any wrong way to do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And to me, that's really exciting. It's cool to hear you talk about writing too. If we're talking about the influence of classical composition, it's like even the vocabulary, I think, is a little different. Like, you were just talking about long legato notes. I think that's the first time the word legato has ever been used on this podcast, which is great. Like, it's interesting. I think, you know, it shows like the way different people frame the way they think about music. I'm fascinated by that kind of thing. And for you, like, what is writing a song look like these days? Do you have like a standard process you go through, or does it sort of change for each tune?
It always comes from melody first. It's never been, maybe I'll hear a drum progression in like another track and be like, oh yeah, I want to copy something like that. But it typically does come from melody, and I think the best way for me to write actually sometimes just getting on a piano and humming, and like I would like imagine like a scenario in my head, and I'll just like already kind of envision like what would the movie be like, what would the music video be like, and like what is the feeling, and I'll just like hum until like I feel like it's fitting there.
Hmm.
Yeah,
I think that's really interesting because I think a lot of artists end up being visual in some way. Like a lot of like musicians, I should say, end up, you know, either like you're saying, seeing like an actual scene in a movie, or, you know, what kind of a movie? Is it a romance? Is it a thriller? You know, that kind of thing. I feel like everybody is visual in a certain way. once you get into it enough and once you kind of let yourself open up to it, because I think that that to me is what I'm hearing you say is talking about just being open creatively and trying to get yourself into that space of whatever that melody is that you like, letting it be whatever it wants to be, right?
Yes, yes.
Instead of trying to control it or force it into some shape that it doesn't fit.
Yeah. You know, I think when I was starting to learn how to produce, I would listen to other people's songs. And if I felt like my drop wasn't hitting it, I would think I'll reference other songs. I'll listen to theirs and see what they're doing. And I will think stuff like, oh, maybe my drop isn't hitting as hard because in their drop, they have a super saw stack, a sub bass, and a vocal chop only. And I here have too many things going on. Or over here, my drop, my LFO rate of the saw stack is too much or too little. And I would try to eliminate what I'm doing and try to copy what other people are doing to learn. Maybe this is how my music will sound better. And I think that's something that every producer goes through, like trying to hear what's wrong with their song and trying to do what other people are doing. Right. And I think it's like a process of just doing that for years and years and slowly coming back to realizing that the stuff that you said was trash is actually not trash. And it's actually your sound, you know?
Ooh, I love that. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's like what I've come to is like, you know, I've started to not send my music to too many people and get all these opinions. Because yeah. I feel like at the end of the day, it's like, if I like it, if I think it sounds good, I think at least one of my fans will too, right?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, it's just, it becomes very toxic when you start to overthink like your song.
Right. Well, and it's one of those things that I think when you're a younger artist, it's easy to fall into of being like, oh, this weird thing I made, it doesn't fit in with everything else I like, or it doesn't sound enough like all of these artists I look up to. When I guess I'm just repeating what you just said, but it's you got to lean into that, because if you look at whoever those artists are that we all idolize when we're young, we idolize them because they don't really sound like anybody else, right? Mm-hmm. And in the end, if you're in this for the long haul, it's that kind of artist that we're all trying to be, right?
Yeah, I think the best advice. But also kind of like not exactly correct, because she's not a mixing engineer, she's not a producer, but she's my best friend. And like, I would always show her music and I'd be like, what do you think of this? What do you think of the mix sound of this? Blah, blah, blah. And she'd be like, Jana, there is no good or bad mix down, you know? It's all a vibe. Like, to some extent, she's like, right, you know? And like, I think that really stuck with me to like, feel like, you know, I need to do what makes me happy and what sounds right to me.
100%. And I it's refreshing to hear that. Honestly, I was just having a conversation with a friend the other day about, you know, production quality and engineering and mixing is it's like an arms race in dance music. Mm-hmm. You know, people are just getting more and more and more advanced, and the engineering is getting so technically clean and everything's so loud and bright, and all of which is amazing. But I was talking to a friend and he was like, yeah, honestly, like everybody's really good right now, but I'm kind of sick of it. Like everything's starting to sound the same because it's all produced to this same one standard. Mm-hmm. And then I think you hear something like your music, for example, and a bunch of other people's who are, to me, it's not even about like good or bad mixing. It's just different choices. Mm-hmm. And it's, to me, very refreshing. Like I was listening to Hope and Chaos earlier today and listening to a lot of this is just like a nerdy thing to notice, but a lot of the drum sounds you were using were really interesting to me because it's a lot of kind of more organic sounding drums, kind of more like rocky drums, but not in the not in the like metal drum thing that a lot of dubstep people are doing right now, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
Just like, yeah, just the drum choices, just that. Really, I was like, oh, this sounds different. This is exciting. Like little choices that. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I guess I should stop telling you about your music and ask you, you know, for you, like, do you think about those little choices when you're writing a song, or is it more just kind of picking what sounds right to you in the moment?
Yeah, honestly, it's all been picking what sounds right to me the moment. Like, for example, I remember putting reverb on my drums, and then my friend was like, oh, you shouldn't do that. And so I didn't do that. And then, and then I went back into being like, no, I like reverb on the snare. And so I did that. And so a lot of the drums on this track, I think, do have reverb. I can't recall. But you know, it's just like, it's my song. I'm going to, if I want to have reverb on this drum and no one else is doing it, or someone tells me that I shouldn't do that, like, it's not their song. They don't need to have reverb on their drum, you know? And it's, I don't know. I love this album because I think I used to be very, like, I listened to a lot of other people's opinions too much. And I think this album was really important for me to, like, you know, hold on to my identity, you know, as like a debut artist. And from here on out, I think because I did this for myself and also for my fans, I feel comfortable with collaborating more in the future and, you know, like feeling like I'm ready.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, you're planting your flag, right? And once you have that base, that thing that people know you for, then I think you're exactly right. You can go and do whatever you want, because there's always that brick at the bottom of the building, right? That sort of establishes mm-hmm. what you're trying to do. Do you see yourself, now that you've done a full album, do you see yourself doing more albums in the future? Is this like a thing you want to continue?
Oh yeah. I mean, no guarantees, you know?
Yeah.
I don't ever want to guarantee my band something and not do it. Though I've done that many times. But I hope I could release an album like every year or so. Like I love albums. Like I think a lot of people have, you know, like at a certain point, like I didn't have enough songs for an album, and I was really pushing for an album because I love the idea of an album. And you know, people were like saying, oh, maybe I just do EPs. And I'm like, no, I want to be an album artist. Yeah. I don't care if EPs maybe will do well or whatever. I just like albums. So I love albums because I feel like, you know, it's like a movie. It's a musical movie. You listen to it, you can stage your track list in a story. You know, I think albums are dope, and I want to continuously keep making albums.
I love that. And yeah, I mean, you mentioned the, you know, we've talked about a bunch already, the cinematic stuff behind a lot of what you do. You talked about the story behind the album. I mean, reading up on this, there's a lot of story in this. It's kind of a high concept project. Like where does that come from, or when does that enter the picture? Like if you're writing a song and very quickly you're sort of envisioning like the movie scene behind it, is it similar when you're thinking of a concept for an album? Like, do you just have a few songs and all of a sudden you start seeing how they're connecting? Where did the concept from the album start from?
So I wrote this album during a time when I was like going through a lot of changes. And when I really stepped back and look at these songs objectively, I saw theme, which is like hope and chaos. And these songs, you know, when I wrote them, like they all had a specific emotion of the time period I was going through. You know, like at least it was fun. I wrote it like when I was leaving my management in the past, right?
Yep.
You know, and like Dystopia, I wrote it during the pandemic when everything was online and everyone was freaking out about, you know, COVID and like all these news. And, you know, like Breakdown and Ghost and Where You Are. I wrote them during heartbreak, during various stages of heartbreak, during denial stages of heartbreak, during anger stages, you know, when they wouldn't text me back, yeah. stuff like that. And finishing this album, like I'm like pretty mentally stable now.
Hey, you know? That's great.
And I mean, I was never immensely unwell and unstable. I was just, you know, I was very stressed out, anxious.
Going through it, yeah.
Sad, going through it. And so, you know, for this album, you know, the reason why I called the intro, the intro of the album is called Chaos Prelude. And it's very orchestral. It's straight up like film score. Like that song is straight up like my education from my college. And so it was an interlude. And I really wanted this album to also be, you know, have the elements of my, of what I studied in school and still kind of be classical, bring some elements. And a lot of classical music has a lot of Greek mythology and culture tied into it. And I really love the story of Pandora's box because she opens the box. She's not supposed to open it.
Yep.
And it was given to her as a punishment because they knew she would open it because she couldn't. She was like so curious and she'd open and all this chaos unleashed. But the one thing that she could hold on to was hope because that was the only thing that was like left inside the box.
Right.
And I felt like that theme combined with what I wanted to tell my sound, my story as like, this is how I sound as an artist. These are my influences. I felt like that was like the perfect theme to capture everything.
Yeah. I mean, I love that. And it's interesting hearing you talk about, you know, these like big overarching concepts for the album. I'm always interested in that because it's one of those things where I think as artists, we put so much thought into all of these decisions and, you know, the concept behind Hope and Chaos, like, this, you know, that's a big concepts you're talking about. Right. And then it's interesting to think about how that translates to the listeners, right? Because I think you're going to have all different kinds of listeners. You're going to have the diehard fans who are, you know, want to devour every inch of the concept and really like study the order of the tracks and, you know, all of that. And then you're going to have also the very casual listener who, you know, just like plays, you know, the single and is like, oh, that's a banger, you know, that kind of
that's
thing.
That's a good drop.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And moves on. And I don't know. I was wondering this about your songwriting in general, because I think Hope and Chaos particularly, you know, it's very personal. It's very emotional music. Is this something you think about, making the personal, making, you know, like, kind of exposing a part of yourself and then trying to make it universal, like trying to figure out how to have it translate to, you know, however many millions of people are going to hear it?
I have never actually written music thinking about how should I make this universal, actually. Right. Maybe I should. Maybe if I do that, I'll get like a viral hit. I don't know.
I mean, maybe you shouldn't. Maybe, I think it's a totally valid thing to say that no, you just write from what you know. You write about your experiences and that's probably the best thing any artist could do.
Maybe. I mean, you know, there is always a question. Is music for yourself or is art for yourself or is art for the people, right? And that's like a philosophical question that, you know, like artists have debated over centuries. But like, I feel like, you know, my music, it is difficult for me to be very specific. If it's about like a specific event in my life, I'm not going to write about it word for word.
Right.
You know, like for example, Dystopia, right? Like it's about being consumed by your phone. It's about like media and it's about like, it's an overall general song and theme about what like online toxicity can do to you and how we deal with that. But in my lyrics, I don't go like, on July 14th, the pandemic hit and I was scared of coronavirus, you know? Like, so I think that I already tried to keep my lyrics and sounds in them as metaphorical as I can. So I hope that people, like, when they listen to it, you know, they can translate it to whatever they're feeling too.
100%. Yeah. And it's so interesting. You said what you said about, you know, is art for the artist or is art for the people? Because I think that's something that doesn't really get talked about enough is that, you know, all of us as artists, when we're making something, there's some part of all of us in the back of our heads that's like, well, I got to make this something that people want to listen to, right?
Like, yeah.
Like I can't 100% just do anything I want. You have to, you know, you have to put it in a structure, in a form. And that push and pull, I mean, I think if you're doing it right, it just makes you a better artist and makes your art better in the end.
Yeah.
But it's a hard thing.
The truth is, there's no right answer for that. Yeah. You know, it's difficult.
No, it's absolutely true. I mean, it makes me wonder for you, what, you know, we were talking about you in college and discovering electronic music and figuring out, oh, this is how it's made and this is what they're doing. What did learning production look like for you? What did, you know, the early stuff you were making electronically sound like? What was early Jana?
Oh, I honestly, it's embarrassingly, it's still my Spotify. I have nice. Like music. My first thing I ever put out, released before I had any like following, was this EP called Ethereality, and it sounds like bunny music. Like, wrote when I was like 20, and like it's like cute, and it was like whoop whoop, like it has all these like, it just straight up sounds like bunny music.
That's
with
so
rainbows.
Funny. I love that. It's like kind of cartoony a little bit.
Maybe, yeah, like kawaii.
No, sure, yeah.
But I still hear like influences and stuff I put out in the past. Like I've noticed it tends to all be very kind of like ethereal, mysterious, airy, melodic, emotional. And, you know, like I think when I was starting to have an audience, you know, and still in the phase of really trying to learn how to become a better producer as well, I struggled with trying to understand what my sound is. And I've noticed that, you know, whether it's writing a harder song like Breakdown, or writing a pop song like Dystopia, or writing a future bass song like Where You Are, I've noticed that my consistency in sound has always been in my melody writing and my sound choices, which tend to lean kind of like airy and whimsical and sometimes orchestral too.
Sure. Do you think part of that, this is just something I was reading when I was doing a little research, is also like some anime influence in that as well?
Yeah. Growing up, I listened to like anime soundtracks a lot. Like, I was a hardcore anime fan. Like, I don't watch as much anime as I wish now. I've been consumed by Netflix.
Oh, of course.
Maybe Netflix needs to have more anime. But I grew up watching anime, and the composer that influenced me the most, his name is Hiroyuki Sawano. He did the soundtrack for Attack on Titan, like Blue Exorcist, Guilty Crown, and those are the animes that I would listen to repeatedly. And his music is a combination of electronic sounds as well as rock music and cinematography. And so, I'm sorry, not cinematography, cinematic sounds.
Right.
And honestly, I think he influenced me a lot.
That's super interesting. I got to go back and listen to some of those soundtracks now, because I definitely watched those shows, but I don't think I was paying enough attention to the music.
Oh my God, those songs are so good. Like, they make the anime so good, man.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there's been a few, I got really obsessed with the Ghost in the Shell soundtrack for years. Mm. And I mean, yeah, there's some incredible stuff out there. I think one thing with music for anime too, maybe there's a link to sort of the bigger like cinematic world there, because I think, like you said, it's oftentimes electronic sounds mixed with rock sounds, but there's also kind of like an emotional like forwardness about a lot of the music. Like it's you know, it's really out there, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Whereas I think in a lot of like, I don't know, a lot of like Western pop music, it's a lot of like metaphor or a lot of sort of like veiled emotion or talking about something by not talking about it. You know what I mean? Whereas I think in anime, it's a lot more upfront.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I don't know. I don't know if that would play into your music as well, but I feel like there's something about that where I hear your music and it's very immediately personal in a way that I think you don't hear in a lot of electronic music right now.
Oh, thank you. Well, I think it also maybe it comes from, you know, being the producer and songwriter and also like singing them.
Yeah.
You know, I think when I think when you sing the songs, you're right, you know, maybe it makes the song more in touch with the message you're trying to deliver. For a while, I was actually, you know, trying to record other vocalists and they all sounded so great, but I felt like their vocal tone, I don't know, didn't suit the way I was writing.
Mm.
And maybe I could have written in a way that was more complimentary to their voice, but maybe it's my own ego, to be honest. But I was like, I think my voice sounds the best on my own music. Yeah. So I'm going to sing on my own songs.
Yeah,
so
absolutely. That's
where I think maybe that's where it comes from.
Yeah, I mean, that makes total sense. And, you know, one thing I think we've returned to a couple times in this conversation is that, you know, doing all of this, especially doing all of it yourself, like you're doing right now or with a small team, I mean, it's so much work. There can be a lot of stress and anxiety, long days, not much sleep, all that. It's like if you're doing all of that and not getting the exact product or vision that you want out of it, then why do it at all, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because I think for so many people, it's easy, especially at the start, to just, you know, look at it as like, well, I just gotta, you know, check off the boxes of what's expected to me. Like, even if you're working really hard, you could end up with something that maybe doesn't represent you really as an authentic person, you know, because you're not leaning into those tendencies. I think it's a really hard thing for an artist to learn. And it seems like you got there pretty quickly once you really started putting music out.
Thank you. Well, to be honest, though, I don't think being a good artist means like you write, produce, sing everything yourself.
Oh, sure, sure. Yeah, like, I wasn't trying to say that. Yeah.
Yeah. No. I certainly like give respect to, honestly, even DJs who don't write their own music, because, you know, I think a lot of the DJs who don't write their own music, they come from an era where the industry was different. You know, maybe they got a fan base off of like playing more shows, but they are great artists in a way where they are great curators. Like they know the business, they know the brand. And like that itself sometimes is a more important art than like actually writing the music, you know, because at the end of the day, this is like where it comes back to like art is art for the people. Because like at the end of the day, you know, even if this DJ doesn't write, doesn't sing, doesn't produce your songs.
Yep.
And, you know, but it's like their fans get this emotion that they ultimately, without them, this emotion, this cult they created would not be there without them. And so I think being an art, there's so many definitions of, and so many ways of like being a great artist. And it's sometimes it's not about being, you know, the most talented musician.
Oh, I completely. Yeah. I couldn't.
This is
agree
like
more.
A different conversation.
Oh,
no.
But this is a good conversation. I love this too, because you're absolutely right. I think it's really more about having a vision for what you want to be as an artist and executing on that vision, whether that is doing it all yourself or whether that is just being, you know, like a, almost like a superhero on stage.
Yeah.
You know, all of that is valid. It's more to me about like, are you being true to your intentions? Are you being true to who you are as a person? You know?
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, at a certain point, like you can't do everything, you know, like I don't edit my own music videos, you know, like I don't know how to do that. And I don't need to learn how to do that. I'm going to hire someone to do that. Or sometimes you will need to hire a creative director because they they're just better at that, you know?
Oh yeah.
And it's, I think like it comes down to knowing, like, you know where your strengths are, you know when to take a step back, and you know when to hire someone, you know?
Yeah. Oh, 100. I mean, that's a skill in and of itself, is knowing your strengths and weaknesses, I think, and knowing where it's smart to focus your time. Because, you know, yeah, sure, any of us could figure out how to do any part of it given enough time. But, you know, this shit is hard. Like, there's already a lot to do. So, you know, you definitely have to lean into your strengths.
Yeah.
Yeah, I completely agree. Well, and let's go back for a second to, you know, you in college discovering electronic music, getting into production. At that point in your life, what did you think you were going to do with your life?
When I started school or started becoming like a DJ?
Like before you started becoming a DJ, like before maybe that light switch flipped on, what did your future look like at that time to you?
I wanted to, you know, I went to school for film scoring, so I wanted to work in film scoring. I imagined my future would have looked like after I graduated, I would have scored an internship with, like, you know, Sony PlayStation or something, or I don't know, work at a video game company as an intern composer, or being an assistant to a composer, or working at a studio and serving coffee until they're willing to let me hop on board and compose for their movie. And the reason why I didn't pursue that path is because, you know, I was exposed to that workforce. You know, I've done like small mini internships with, you know, these game companies, and, you know, the environment just didn't seem appealing to me as a girl who was going to come out of college at the age of 22. Like, I wanted something exciting. Like, yeah. I want to work with like younger people and party and be on stage. And like, I want it to be fun. I'm not ready to sit down in an office 9 to 5 and compose music. That's literally why I'm not a film composer.
I love that. Just the way you said compose is perfect. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I was like, you know, I want to like take photos of myself on Instagram, you know, do stuff like that.
Right. Be a kid. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, be a hooligan.
What was some of the early artists you saw at raves that really maybe flipped that switch on?
Oh, I've always like wanted to be like Alice in Wonderland. Mm. You know, I mean, she was like the main female DJ when I was like listening to music. I loved her. Rez wasn't as popular yet back then, but we know, like, I still heard of her. I was like, gosh, she's sick. Like, yeah. I love her. And she's like so big now. Like,
it's crazy.
I remember when she had like 20,000 followers on SoundCloud, and like super inspiring to see. And
she's another one too, where I think she had that vision from the start, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm, like you could, even when she was a small artist, you could kind of see it.
Yeah. Like her brand is so her, and it's great. She's literally created a cult off of that.
Yeah.
I first artists I like listened to were like, you know, the obvious, like Major Lazer, Diplo, and a lot of Yellow Claw. And I didn't really start getting into future bass until like maybe 2 years in, or a year in, sorry. You know, I listened to like Elenium, of course. And he got so big, man.
Oh,
like,
man.
From the time I started listening to him and now, like, it's amazing.
Yeah,
and
he's on another plane of existence at this point.
I know. He's ascended to a phoenix now.
Yeah, that's right. You're exactly right. He did what he said he was going to do.
Yep.
Oh, that's so funny. Well, what came first for you? Was it production or was it DJing once you started getting into it?
Oh, it was production. I didn't know how to DJ. Man, DJing is so different from like playing piano. So like, it took me a while to learn how to DJ. I mean, it was like, cause you know, the thing with playing an instrument, when you press something, it makes a sound.
Yeah.
But a lot of DJing is about cueing. So when you press it, it's not going to make a sound. It's just setting up something. Right. That was a very different mindset for me.
Oh, that's so interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, I think I got better with DJing because I was streaming on Twitch of myself DJing. Like when I was in college, I was streaming 4 times a week. I just DJ. I mess up so much, but it's okay. You know,
so you started streaming like early then. You were streaming back in college?
I started streaming when I was, I think like 2017.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
And I mean, obviously you have a big following, to use your terminology. You have a big cult on Twitch at this point, which I think is amazing. I mean, I'm always interested in people who kind of build their careers and build their movements and their projects outside of the traditional structures. Because, mm-hmm. you know, looking at your career, it seems like, and correct me if I'm wrong, but from my perspective, is like you were able to get to where you've gotten kind of without any crazy cosigns, without any kind of crazy, you know, label push. Like it really seems like you've built it outside of the traditional system, which I think is impressive and just always interesting to talk about that path.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, like, it's pretty interesting to me too, because like I've never toured with anyone. Like no one has ever like reached out to me and like asked me to tour with them.
Yeah.
And you know, like I think I'm pretty proud of myself for that.
You should be. Yeah.
My first tour was literally my own headline tour, and
it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, I mean, I played shows with other people now, of course, but you know, it's even like when I was streaming on Twitch, it was like because I wasn't getting, no one wanted to book me for shows, you know, and so the only way people could ever see me DJ was online on my own stream. And so, yeah, I think after I gained a bigger audience, you know, people were like, oh, maybe we should book her.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So that's a great segue, because I wanted to ask you, what was the transition from URL to IRL? Like, you know, once you build a fan base online, I think for a lot of artists, translating an online fan base to an in-person, you know, sell tickets kind of fan base, it's not always a smooth transition. But for you, you know, if you started off headlining your own tours, what was it like playing like early shows for you?
Honestly, though, I feel lucky in the sense where I feel like the beginning stages of my career weren't as long and arduous as most artists are. Like a lot of artists, when they first start playing shows, I think they are playing shows for like $50, at least for like a year or two.
Oh yeah. Oh,
and yeah. I was very lucky in the way where for me, that was only maybe like a couple months. I was very supported by like fellow college friends who were, you know, running shows nearby. And, you know, I think that at the end of the day, you know, it's about your music. Like,
yeah,
you can have a lot of Instagram followers, you can have a lot of YouTube followers, but if they're following you for anything that's not your music, it's harder to translate that into ticket sales. For a while, in the beginning, when I was doing like a lot of Twitch and YouTube stuff more consistently and I wasn't getting booked for shows, a part of me was like nervous or scared that maybe people only liked me or followed me because I was a girl. Mm-hmm. Like I was like an Asian girl. And yeah, you know, girls tend to get more followers on social media sometimes. And, you know, I was afraid that no one actually cared about my music, or I was also afraid that people only listen to me because they like the video game I remixed. Because in the beginning, I did a lot of video game remixes.
Right, so and you had some viral moments with that, right?
Yeah, and that was my way of trying to get some fans, some followers, yeah, you know?
Of course.
So I was super nervous about that. Like, will people actually like me as an artist? And so, you know, I started putting on my own music too, and people listened to it. And I was like, okay,
hey, it worked. Like, great. Yeah.
They like it. Okay. And then, you know, they come to my shows and I'm like, ah, oh, nice. Yeah, love it. I guess awesome. I'm an artist.
Yeah, sure. Why not? But I mean, that's an interesting thing too, right? Talking about earlier, you were talking about, you know, early on, like comparing your music to other people's. And now we're talking about like, am I an artist? Can I call myself an artist? Because, you know, it makes me think about imposter syndrome, which I think every artist deals with at some point in their career. And probably we all deal with kind of on and off as we go. How have you, you know, how have you sort of managed to have that, to maintain that inner confidence, that sense of self, and not get derailed kind of as the hype grows, as the career builds, as there are more eyes on you, all of that?
You know, I think that the moment, if I ever become very, like, I think it's always important to stay humble, because the moment you're like, I'm the best, that's when your art's probably going to turn to shit. And, you know, I don't think I'm anywhere near like where I want to be yet, you know, like what I have right now is not enough for me. Like, and it's funny you say that, because I actually, like, before this call, I was talking to my manager and I was talking to my boyfriend. I actually like was crying because I didn't know how stressed I was about this album release and this tour going on sale. You know, it's been a rough year for all of us. And you know, like it's been a strange place for EDM, and I don't know. Like I don't know where I stand in this field. You know, it's hard to tell until like after this tour. But I feel like I always want to be better. Like I always feel like I could do better. And sometimes it gets toxic. Like I think I need to spend more time on appreciating what I have and what I've done, and stop disregarding what's in front of me. And yeah. I think that everyone can relate to that, you know, like we gotta appreciate and love ourselves a little more.
yeah and be in the moment, right? Like mm-hmm. I think that's so hard when you're really working towards something, and like you said, you're trying to better yourself and you're trying to get to the next level of whatever it is you're working on at the time. It can be so easy to just focus on that and not pay attention to all the cool stuff you're doing to get there, and to enjoy all the little wins that it takes to get you to that point in the first place, right?
Yeah.
No, it's tough, man. I mean, how are you, and I'm only asking this because it's something I struggle with. How are you with, you know, you're a prolific streamer? You know, you're out there, you're putting very personal music out there. Of course, as artists, we all have to deal with the social media beast and feed that beast from time to time. How are you with all of that, with, you know, putting yourself out there versus, you know, getting some space emotionally for yourself?
Yeah, truthfully, I mean, you mentioned streaming. I honestly don't stream as much as I did when I was in college. I streamed like 4 times a week back then.
That's so much, yeah.
So much. And it's hard for me to even stream once a week now, because, you know, I have shows and there are the things that are going on that aren't just music. And before, I have forced myself to stream, like, even though I didn't want to. And it's really affected me badly, because I did burn out and I started hating what I do. And so it's really important for me to take time and for myself and not always force myself to work. And that's why, you know, I feel bad towards like my, I know I shouldn't feel bad, but like, I feel like I should stream more, because I think my fans who watch me stream, they're super supportive. My Discord is super supportive. And I think they understand that, you know, if I, you know, at the end of the day, like, I'm a musician, and as artists, we're not influencers, you know, right. We can't always be on social media, because we need time to be creative. And if it's a constant go, it doesn't become artistic anymore. you know?
Yeah, it doesn't like, leave space for the art to come in and for it to find that creativity, almost like what we were talking about before with the songwriting, where you have to leave some space and just, you know, have some kind of unstructured time for those moments to happen, for inspiration to hit. Like, you can't schedule inspiration, you know?
I know. And I used to think I could do that. I used to schedule when I used to be like, okay, I'm going to stream from this time to this time on this days and this day. And then from this time to this time, I'm going to focus on writing music. Yeah. Sometimes it works. Sometimes it doesn't. And sometimes when you force it, it just sounds like shit.
Yes. Yes, it does. Yeah.
And so I think I'm, you know, I try as much as I can to post on my social media. But, you know, at the end of the day, like, music should come first. You're a musician.
Yeah. 100%. And like you said before, to tie it all back in, I mean, that's what you have to focus on if you want people to follow you for your music, right? As opposed to your, you know, whatever it is, your wild antics.
Yeah,
you got to do it. And you mentioned, you know, your upcoming tour for the album, which is early next year, right? And you were doing a tour right before lockdown as well, right? That kind of got cut off.
Yeah, it was a bunch of shows. It was called the City of Dreams Tour. It wasn't branded around a single or an album. It was more so, I guess, branded around an experience. And I think my branding back then was very cyberpunk, very futuristic, very cyberpunk. And that's just like kind of the direction I went with it. And, you know, I only did a couple of dates on there. I only did like 3 dates and then everything got shut down. And so,
frustrating,
Yeah, and so during that period of it shutting down, I got to focus on this album more. And so with this album tour, it's definitely way more meaningful for me. So people who didn't get to see the City of Dreams tour, I'm sure they don't care about missing that out. Because, you know, the album tour is going to be better. So
Well, as much as you'd care to share, what are you thinking for the tour? Is there going to be some live performance aspects?
Yeah, so during the pandemic, I actually started becoming more of a live performer. I bought a Nord Electro 60. I started incorporating that into my sets, and I also started doing live vocals, which like I didn't do before in any of my past tours. So for the shows that I've been doing in 2021, I've been, you know, bringing the keyboard and singing some of them, kind of as practice too.
Sure.
And so the Hope and Chaos tour will be my first like official tour where I'm doing all of this professionally. And it's going to be exciting. I think I'm currently getting the visuals done for it. And yeah, it's going to be a banging show.
No doubt. It's exciting. I mean, it's a lot more to deal with all the live elements. But in my opinion, man, it's going to pay off huge. Because once you take it from just a DJ set to incorporating the live elements, I think it immediately becomes so much more unique and there's so much more personality imbued into a show like that. I don't know. I'm stoked, man. I think you're going to have a blast. That's going to be great. When does that start? Like March, February?
Mid-February.
Okay.
Yeah.
How do you like touring in general with the experiences you've had so far? Because that's a whole nother mode of life when you're on tour.
It's tiring, man. It's so tiring. The only thing that's made my life better is getting the Amex Platinum card and getting access to the lounges.
Yes.
Man, like it's an expensive card, but it's worth it for me.
Yeah, let's talk I travel about airline so much. Lounges, man. Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah. I mean, it's tiring. Especially because I haven't been traveling with a tour manager. I've been going wherever myself, and I carry my keyboard. It's like 40 pounds. I'm like 120 and like, it's just hard to carry. Yeah. My back hurts. So I think once I get a tour manager, it'll be okay.
No doubt.
But it's tiring. Yeah.
Well, and touring on your own too. I have toured most of my career on my own without a tour manager, and It's a lot, you know, you just kind of like lose your bearings. Like you lose track of reality a little bit because it's really just you. Like sometimes I almost, to bring it back to the cinema thing, sometimes when I'm on tour by myself, it almost feels like I'm watching me in a movie, you know, like you're just going through cities you don't know, seeing people on the street you've never seen before. And there's it gets kind of surreal in a weird way. Like there's a certain detachment that I've experienced when I do it too long, you know, without going home.
Yeah, I feel that. I mean, you know, we never really get to experience a city because we go to the state and we head straight to the green room, back to the hotel, never really explore. So to be honest, it never really feels like I'm traveling. It just feels like I'm getting on a really uncomfortable flight and then going to a stinky green room.
Right, And you're always anticipating the flight after that, right? So it's you're never comfortable because it's always... You get off the plane and probably in less than 24 hours, you're just going to have to get back on it anyway.
Yeah. And also like, I don't sleep well on the first nights of the hotel.
Oh yeah.
And so I always get really bad sleep.
That's rough, man.
Yeah. But you know, it's the fans who show up and, you know, it makes it worth it.
Oh, of course. I mean, the shows, I assume you're like me. I mean, for me, I'm so addicted to playing the shows. There's like no better feeling in the world. I would do pretty much anything to be able to play a show. Like at any given moment, I would do pretty much anything to do it, you know? And so for me, yeah, all the other stuff sucks and I can sit back and talk about how much it sucks, but... You know, of course, there's a reason why we do it. And I think, I don't know, I last point on this and then I'll stop ranting. But I think it's also about when you're on stage at the show, it's not just you and the feeling you get performing, but it's also the people who are there with you, right? Like the people in the crowd and the energy you create together that you couldn't create by yourself and they couldn't create by themselves. You know, to me, that's part of what makes it so special and what kind of nothing else can replace.
And honestly, like, you know, concert venues, some of the best and worst things happen there, you know, whether it's meeting your like next relationship, you know, or, you know, discovering things for the first time.
Yeah. Like, you know, things, yeah.
Things, you know, like some people have like the best moments at your show. Like one of my friends messaged me and this is a sad topic now, but like his friend passed away last year due to COVID and they messaged me telling me that they went to my show and that was like the happiest they ever seen them.
Oh, wow.
And so, you know, I went on their website, they had a funeral website. I wrote a message and you know, it's music really does bring people together.
It's so moving, man. I mean, yeah. And to think about the idea that something we make that just, you know, didn't exist one day, then we had an idea, then something is created, that can go on to affect anybody else's life, especially in such a profound way. I mean, it's like, I can't even, it's too much to even really conceptualize, you know? But there is something because we've all had music that did that to us, right? So you know that feeling exists and the idea that maybe you could make it for somebody else. Yeah, it's a really special thing. It makes what we do feel really significant, you know?
You know, it makes me think about like how many people I listen to and I don't even follow them on social media. I listen to them repeatedly on Spotify though.
Yeah.
And how many moments that song has lived with me in like in really special occasions, like whether it's jamming out to the song with my boyfriend in the car. And like that artist will never know. Cause you know, not everyone who has an experience with the song is going to message the artist.
Right.
You know? And it's just kind of crazy how you can make something and then put it out there and how deeply it affects someone. And I had this one experience where my friend Vincent, I don't know if you know him. His name Rob Vincent.
Yeah,
Rob?
Yeah, not well, but we do know each other a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. So like, he had this remix of Alice in Wonderland's "You Don't Know Me," and I would listen to that song repeatedly when I was going through a breakup. And when I met him, he told me that that song, it almost didn't come out. He made it like really quickly.
Oh, wow.
And that it almost didn't come out because of like something was going through or something. But you know, I don't think I ever, as a fan, I never messaged him, dude, I listened to that song like 50 times a day and it made me feel so good about myself. It's just crazy how like, you know, people can put something out there and you never know, somewhere in the world, someone is just like so impacted by that piece of art.
Yeah, it's incredible. You know, something you make can become the soundtrack to somebody's life.
It's That's amazing. Yeah,
it's such a crazy thing. I mean, even just like now you're just making me, you know, think about gratitude, like just to be able to participate in this process at all, you know, whether anything you or I make that ever affects anybody, but just being able to participate in it, you know, knowing how much music has meant to me personally, it is kind of an honor just to be able to do it at all, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's something in it, man. We got kind of deep there for a second. But no, this is really great. I really appreciate you taking the time to do it. I'm enjoying talking to you. Before we kind of start wrapping it up, is there anything we haven't talked about? Anything else that's on your mind? Anything else you want to let people know?
I'm so brain fried from this album release. You know, the only thing on my mind is, you know, come see me on tour 2022. Open Chaos Tour starts mid-February. You know, my tickets can be great holiday presents.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm just shamelessly self-promoting.
Oh, I love it.
Right,
we'll link to all of that when this drops as a podcast too.
But yeah, I mean, you know, I don't, there's not anything that I have to publicly announce or say, you know, happy holidays.
Yeah, happy holidays. Absolutely.
Have a good new year.
Well, I'll ask you the final question for this interview. Before I do, just thank you for your time. I really enjoyed talking to you. I hope you had a good time as well.
Yeah, me too. Thank you so much for having me. This is like a really deep, insightful conversation we've had.
No, it really has been. I really enjoyed this. And yeah, you're welcome back anytime. Let's come back, do a part two sometime. And you know, best wishes for the tour and for all of that. And here is the final question. It's the same question I ask at the end of each one of these interviews. And we already kind of echoed it a little bit, but basically just looking for a time in your life, a memory, a moment. It could be from any time when in a single moment, music really had a deep impact on you, really deeply affected you in that moment. And that's meant to be a super broad question. There's no wrong answer. Kind of the first thing that pops into your head.
Oh, definitely like middle school, you know, going through puberty. Mm. I listened to like Evanescence a lot. And
oh, yeah. That's perfect puberty music. Yeah.
she was Amy Lee is my queen, my jam. I was like really angsty. And, I don't know what I was angsty about. I was just angsty.
That's great.
But I listened to her Evanescence a lot. I listened to like this German band called Tokyo Hotel. They're like the German Jonas Brothers.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah, and I listened to like, you know, Paramore. I listened to so much like pop rock kind of music. And yeah. I can't really pinpoint why that was so important for me. Like, it just was. I was going through puberty.
Right. Yeah. Well, and sometimes, I mean, we were talking about like when music ends up soundtracking moments in your life, right? And sometimes if you're feeling angsty and you don't know why, and all of a sudden you hear music that sounds like maybe somebody else who understands that feeling, I think that can be so meaningful, especially at a young age.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel.
I love that. Well, yeah, that's a perfect answer. Shout out to Evanescence, man.
Love them.
Are they still making music or is it just her solo now?
I think they are. I think they're actually on tour.
Oh, shit.
I just don't know a lot of their new songs.
I don't either. I got to check back in because, yeah, I definitely, those first couple albums were on rotation, but yeah, I have not kept up.
Yeah, same.
Well, thank you so much for doing this. I appreciate it. I hope you have a great Thanksgiving, happy holidays, all that. And this has been great.
Thank you so much. You too.
Awesome. All right. Well, I'll let you get out of here.
Thank you. Is your name Willie?
Yeah, it's my real name. It's Willie Joy.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool. All right. All right. Nice meeting you,
nice
Willie.
Nice meeting you too. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right, bye.